Hello.
Yes. Welcome to Flash's Long Commute. I should say that with a little more enthusiasm.
Welcome to Flash's Long Commute.
No, that was too Warcrafty. But welcome. First thing I've done in my attempt to revamp this thing to something worth listening to is to collect some sounds. I probably should also write a script, but all I have are some notes I took on the long commute. So maybe that'll be a kind of a free vamp section that I just do, a little rambling while I cross the plains of Wiltshire. Let me just stop this and do a sound check.
Will the recording begin there? Yes, great. It was a good thing I checked that, because it was recording from the built-in mic instead of the cheesy headphones that I splashed out all the 10 pounds with. Should I say dollars? I think most of my listeners will be dollars, but you know I'm in England, so pounds it is. 10 pounds is like, what, $14, $15 now? It's outrageous. But I digress, yes. And the playback was through the internal speakers, too. Now we're going via USB. So I thought, since I would describe my train ride and break it down into segments, I think there's four major stations on my ride. Salisbury is where I begin. Skip a couple, go to Andover, then Basingstoke, and then Waterloo at the other end. And so those will represent segments in the show, Flash's Long Commute. I thought I could just start with with some differences in how I perceived my train ride and what I actually experienced. This is what I thought trains rides were like. Some of you will recognize that audio clip. I won't mention any names, but their initials are
Nintendo.
Yeah, it's nothing like that. In fact, I used this Audacity software and a MacBook Air from work to just record the entire two-hour train ride. And that hum you've been hearing in the background, that's what it actually sounds like. That's the soundtrack of my journey. Every single day. It was your average 5 p.m. train out of London Waterloo. It was overcrowded. They had cut the length of the train by two coaches. No explanation whatsoever. And the AC didn't work even for the first class. There is no AC for coach, only first class. Other lines just to the east of the one that I ride on does have air conditioning in coach. I slipped onto a train one day. I just missed the 4:20 to Salisbury and decided to catch the fast train to Basingstoke and pick up with the next train there. And the train terminating in Basingstoke was so nice compared to the train that I was on, I thought I was in first class. I actually went and looked. The aisles were wider, the seats were wider, it's cleaner, and it had air conditioning. It was also less populous, at least for that leg of the trip. So it was fairly easy to get a seat and relax, and knowing that when you're the train stops and they shout all change, you need to get out. And I walked literally across the platform, like crossing a road. My train that I would have caught that goes all the way to Salisbury was maybe 10 minutes behind me. But I had a much nicer first hour of my trip. And a lot of the people that crowd on in Waterloo, a change at Basingstoke, and there's a good chance of getting a seat there, whereas there's zero to none if you get on anywhere prior to that. Room for improvement. It's normally a 10-coach train. A lady that sat down next to me a few days ago told me it was called the Beast. Probably appropriately so. Yes, really, really should write a script, but
what the heck, push on.
There's generally little to no leg room, and you have to give up on the feeling of personal space. It's not quite like you've seen in movies that take place in Japan or other places, even in Europe, where they cram as many bodies as possible on. But it's very close to that. Got to get used to somebody's elbow in your ribs, somebody's leg pushing against your leg from the other side, and fighting for a place just to put your feet down on the floor. And they've somehow found the perfect angle for the seats so that you can't lean back and go to sleep, and you can't lean forward without falling onto the person across from you. Oh, I should tell you that. Each coach has at least four, sometimes more in the longer ones, four tables. And these are tiny tables that four seats are around, and two of them face you, the other two go the same direction as all the other seats. So you could actually be riding backwards. But the catch is, there's a person facing you whose knees are practically touching yours. They're highly coveted for people who want to work with laptops on the train. I mean, it is 2 hours long, so some people get a little work done. I found it impossible to do with a regular size laptop. I have a 13-inch MacBook, and between that and my elbows, there wasn't room to push the trackpad around without, you know, overlapping on somebody else. Or the back of my laptop, you know, when you tilt it out of 90 degrees so that you can see the screen, you're touching the other guy's laptop. I switched to a little 10-inch PC for a while, but the battery life wasn't good on that. It was kind of old. But eventually ended up with an iPad and a Bluetooth keyboard. I managed to get a little bit done that way, but the key part is access to the internet. One of the sound bites, one of the bumpers I wanted to do, someone saying, "Please mind the gap between laptop and the internet." So when you leave Salisbury, but before you've gotten to Andover, there's two other stops. And my T-Mobile connection goes from 3G in Salisbury back down to E, and a brief period with no service, and then that GPRS that's next to useless before going back up to 3G in Andover. Then it does the same thing between Andover and Basingstoke, and that is a longer distance, so you spend more time with little or no service. So that's the point where I reckon you're supposed to be creative and not use content from the internet. There's usually Wi-Fi on somewhere in those stations, not free, but on, and you're not there long enough. If you're in a station for 2 minutes, there's something wrong. So by the time your laptop's negotiated a connection and you've put in your password for BT phone or whatever service you're using, you're leaving again. You're not in range. And then there's a good gap before you approach the outskirts of London, maybe even as far out as Wimbledon. And that's still another 10 miles or so. So I have to, you know, download my new email, write replies, check the service, hit send then. A lot of times it can end up just disappearing. I'll get the recipient, if we'll get a message that says, "This message has no content." And she has to write me back and say, "Send it again." And that's no fun, because I'm not always sure what it was I had no content to. Or she, you know, as we found recently, she doesn't get it until hours later when I'm finally at work or at home, depending on which way I'm going, and I have a solid Wi-Fi connection, and then the message goes out. So yeah, look for that in the future. Right, quick overview of the trip. I'm not sure how much details I want to give. I don't know. I'm maybe vain about it, but I don't want people tracking me down and wanting to watch me while I'm recording stuff. I realized I could use this Audacity and the iPhone headphones I have to kind of sit at the desk with my arm up and go, "Yes, the person standing next to me has a basketball jersey on. You don't see that much in England." And not be too overheard, but it really depends on how close they are. because I don't know. I have a little stage fright, especially for the ad lib stuff. It's not the same as if I was talking to somebody on the other end. I realize these aren't the best of conditions to be recording in, but this has got to be better than the server room that is currently my office. But I thought maybe the train noises, if you heard how that sounds, it might be better to dub that over top than the air conditioning noises. It might even give you the visual imagery of riding on one of these trains. I know that I'm one of the lucky ones when it comes to the daily commute. I didn't know that at first, but if I get on the right train in the mornings, I can get a seat. The train that I ride originates in Salisbury, and it's seven cars that pulls up, and then they attach three more that already have people on it from somewhere. And those, unfortunately, are the more choice seats. So I can go into one of those three cars and find a seat that I prefer. And sometimes, like on a Friday, it's less crowded and you're completely unaware that there's seating issues three or four cars away. Also, if you sit near the first class section, people going in and out, or the drinks trolley, you know, a guy pushing a little narrow metal cart that's got tea and coffee and sodas and a bunch of snacks on it. When that goes through, it lets a gust of cool air out, so you can get that. Sometimes the windows are open, but most times not. But I still feel lucky in that I can almost guarantee getting a seat unless they've cut the length of the train and the people that have arrived ahead of me. And arrival times. You do not want to arrive less than 10 minutes before the train leaves, or even that advantage won't get you a seat. Especially leaving Waterloo and heading out to Salisbury. I've seen times where I've missed a train by 3 minutes, and it's 35, 40 minutes till the next one leaves. And soon as they announce it, in fact, before they announce it, before it goes up on the big wall, there's regulars who know what train to expect, and they get on it. There's already 20 some odd people on it minutes after they unlock the doors. And if you are starting in Waterloo, you want a seat, you got to get there 10 minutes early. Maybe five if you know to go to the far end of the train. It's not always the seat you want, but it's the seat that's available, and that is crucial for a two-hour trip. And they never explain why they make it shorter, but sometimes they just think, oh, 60 or so people don't really need to sit. And this is the same for whether you have bought a ticket 5 minutes before from a machine, or whether you have an annual pass that's good for months. I have an annual pass that my work employer helped me buy, and it is a major expense. It costs more than what my car payments were, but if you add into that gas repairs and trying to find someplace to park in London, forget it. It's going to cost you a lot more. But that doesn't buy you any reserved seats. You don't even get a reserved seat in first class. But there's usually, yes, many spare seats in first class. At least until you get on that last leg between Basingstoke and London. It's fair game then. That is just about an hour's train ride, and it is packed solid, because the commuters there are smart enough to know to take the next train to get fastest to London, whether it originated in Basingstoke or not. You know, the connection. It's whatever the next train is. And there's multiples. You know, there's, what, 18, 20 tracks into Waterloo? And they're arriving all the time. So, you know, I didn't anticipate how crowded it would be. And two of the cars, sometimes three, are only half sized. I mean, they're not short cars, but half of the carriage is your first class and the other half is coach. And that's where I'm gravitating to, so I can get that little gust of blissful cool air as people come and go. It has a spring-loaded door to prevent it from being propped open or anything, but there's quite a bit of foot traffic. So let's see, I covered, it's crowded, it's a long trip, it's hot, it can be smelly. The little trays on the seats, if you're not lucky enough to sit at a table, there is a fold-out tray like on an airplane seat. It's about the same size. And when I've seen, you know, these trains get cleaned maybe once a day. Maybe. And they do that in the mornings before they start. And by the time you have ridden that train, I mean, no one has flipped down that tray and wiped it off. You've got to realize it's equal to sitting it on the concrete platform, whatever you've got there. So I really resist the urge to eat anything on the train. When the heat's gotten to me and I've had a long day from dashing about, I will get an orange juice, because the orange juice isn't something I need to drink really cold, like a diet soda. You can forget about getting a diet soda on these trains. Yes, the guy on the drinks trolley will have ice, and sometimes he'll even give it to you. There's been one fellow I try to avoid because he will not give you ice with anything but a mixed drink. He saves it for his first class gin and tonics. You try to get a diet soda, like a Coke Zero, they'll have it. I mean, they also carry ciders and beers and little tiny bottles of wine like on an airplane. You know, it's not free, none of it's free, but they do have it. The reason I avoid the ice is because he uses his hands. He'll use a cup and dip it into this big plastic bag of ice that he's clipped to the end of his trolley. And these are the same hands he's handling the money with, other people's food, chips, crisps, pushing the cart itself. You never see a napkin, a serviette. At least not him using one. He will give you a serviette if you want one. You see him make the hot tea. They'll charge you £2 for a cup of tea that he's just jetted some hot water into and dipped a tea bag in. It must cost him all of 25p to make. But he's got you trapped. I can't imagine it. I know it's 2 hours long. I take a drink with me usually. Or what I'll do is, when I buy the orange juice, I'll keep that bottle with the screw on top, put some water in it, and bring it back the next day. That's another thing I noticed. I don't see a lot of people with travel mugs. When I first started doing this, I didn't see any for weeks. And then I saw one or two, and I asked around at work, and the ladies in the undergraduate office told me that Starbucks had tried to capitalize on that by giving people option to have a returnable mug, and they could, you know, go to the Starbucks in Salisbury, have their mug filled up, drink it on the train, return it at the one in Waterloo, get another cup. You know, that thing went, and they had thousands of them, but they ended up losing their shirts on it between the cost of cleaning those mugs and the ones that were just thrown away. People quit doing it. It was too much bother on both ends. So you don't see it much, but I'd say about out of the 60 people in an average coach, you'd see two. Water bottles are more common, or they'll buy a drink at the station. The little cafes in the stations on this line are called Punkin. And I know Punkin is an odd word to be using in England. They're not particularly common, pumpkins. They do have them, but they're not native or anything. And I think that they'll just chose it for its distinction. And cafes are done in a pumpkin color, so logos and such. I'll see if I can find a link. I think that's a pretty decent cup. Also, you've got to get some strategy on your loyalty card. If you're going to buy a cup of coffee, you can have a Starbucks, you can go to Costa, you can go to Cafe Nero, you can go to the Punkin, and there's at least one other company that's slipping my mind. They're all about the same price, but the loyalty card makes Punkin, at least right now, a better value, because it only takes 5 punches to get a free refill. All the other cards I've seen are 10. I think one of them's even a 12. And you get to choose what you want. You know, I treated myself to a mocha on one of those, and the lady actually gave me extra cards and whispered that they were changing to 10 soon. I tried to give those away to people that also commuted, and then they looked at me very suspiciously. But since I hadn't filled it up and said, here, take this card and redeem it for a free coffee, I couldn't really find many takers. very suspicious. I don't want to make this too long, and I will probably revisit some of these subjects in greater detail. One thing I did want to do before I went was to describe my commute, you know, kind of say, here's my badge of honor and why I think this would work. Why me? Why should I do a podcast about, not necessarily about my commute, but centering around my commute. It's about 2 hours from start to finish and then 2 hours back. So I spend 4 hours a day, 5 days a week on the train. I get up at 5 a.m. I'm out the door by 6 on the train at 6:44 to London Waterloo. I arrive at London Waterloo about 8:20. Then I've got to cross Waterloo to East Waterloo. This is the fastest route. I could just walk outside and go across Waterloo Bridge and then up the Strand. But the fastest way, and the way I go when there's bad weather, is to just go across Waterloo Station to Waterloo East, get on a train on Platform B going to Charing Cross. It probably takes another 10 minutes and then another 5 to cross Trafalgar Square and into our building on Pall Mall East. And then in the evening, after a day of work, I do it all again in the other direction. So, that's my chops right there. I have a feeling it's longer than most of the people who listen to this. It is not, by far, the longest commute people do to work in London. I mean, I haven't met them. That defunct website, thelongcommute.com, mentioned someone with a 6-hour commute. And if I think about it, there's probably right on my train people who have ridden further, because it originates in Yeovil Junction or Exeter St. David's. And I'm not going to look it up for you. You got Google Maps. You look those up and see how far that is to London. And you'll see Salisbury is about halfway. So I'm imagining those people are doing 4-hour trips. And I cannot gosh, to do that 4-hour trip, I'd have to get up, what, 2 a.m., 3 a.m.? It would totally dominate your life. I'm trying to look for little things to keep my mind creative. Oops, I feel like I'm slipping into a rant, so I'm going to wrap this up. This has been Flash's Long Commute. All change.